That's right. My name's Ill Will. This is Skip Tracer 2.0. It's like three chuckles. I like that nobody got that. I appreciate that. That means things are going well, and that's really important. I kind of retitled this from Couch to Compromise, and it is a talk on how to own a large enterprise. This is a collection of attacks. It's an attack chain that I've assembled that I've used many times as a penetration tester to go from my couch to being a domain admin within many large enterprises. And I got so sick of doing it that I thought I'd tell you all how to do it so everyone knows how to defend themselves against it and we can just stop doing it, right? So this is going to be like a really nutrient-dense talk. We're a little bit behind, so I'm going to screen through a lot of this. So get your phones out. Take pictures of what you need to take pictures of. There's going to be a lot of tools mentioned up here. There's going to be a lot of text on this screen. I'm going to move through it fast. So if you want to take pictures for later, cool. Also, the slides are up on my GitHub, and so you can grab them from there. I think they are. They're there sometimes when GitHub can figure out how LFS works. So this is what I do. You don't really care. I'm a security researcher now. I was a penetration tester. I was a security engineer. Whatever. I'm founder and coordinator of BurbSec, which is one of the largest and most well-attended InfoSec meetups in the country in the Chicago area. We've got five of them going right now. It's kind of like 2,600 times five because now every Thursday there's at least one of them happening somewhere in the Chicago area, Chicago Burb, something like that. We get tons of people who turn up, and that's really cool, and that's happening every week. I'm also, let's see, what does this say I've done? I've given over 60 presentations in six countries. That's probably higher now. I wrote this a while ago. I yell at the internet a lot on Twitter. My Twitter handle is there. If the focus is good enough, it's at Johnny Xmas with a zero and a four because I'm that old. And that's what the cool kids did in the 90s. Anyway, nobody cares about this. Who was here? Who saw the TSA keys talk in here last year when we released the final Safe Skies key? Yep, that was me. So this is my second time in the big room at Hope. This is my first time doing the big room solo. This is my, I don't know what number Hope this is. This is my 18th year coming to Hope. I've been coming to Hope since H2K. This room gets bigger every time I see it, so that's amazing. So this is only my second ish time speaking here. I'm really excited. I really love Hope. It was the first InfoSec, the first con I ever went to. And I'm really excited to be here. I love this con. I love the weirdness of it. I love the socio-political aspect. I love the hacktivism. I love the people who attend because it's so different than like any of the like bajillion hacker cons that are out there now. This is something different. This is something weird, and this is something that needs to happen. I'm glad it is, and I'm glad I've been a part of it for so long. So thank you guys for having me here and letting me do this. This is one of the most exciting times of my life just because I love Hope. Thank you. All right, moving on. Anyway, so why am I here? I was a penetration tester. I focused mainly in medical data warehouses and financial institutions, i.e. banks. That's pretty much, like, that seems like the place where a lot of people who are working in InfoSec want to get to. They want to be penetration testers. The absolute question I get asked more than anything, career-wise, is, how do I get to be a penetration tester? And that's, like, such a massive fucking, like, how do you answer that? Oh, you call Frank, and he'll hook you up. I say that, like, you made being a penetration tester boring, but, like, 60% of it is report writing and communications and talking to C-levels and stuff, and a lot of people don't like to hear that answer. But, so, like, my job was to rob banks, right? Day in, day out, sit on my couch, rob banks. That's awesome, right? That's pretty much the best job on earth. Like, anyone who's coming to a conference like this probably has that in sort of, like, their top 20, like, cool things that maybe I could do. Rob banks. Me being, you know, someone who was a kid once loves the idea of being able to rob banks. You guys made it boring. I was doing the same thing on every engagement, every time. It got to the point where once I got a new client, I wasn't excited anymore. I knew what I was going to find. I knew what attack chain I was going to use. And I knew it was going to work. And it was a yawn fest. You guys literally made being a penetration tester boring, being a bank robber uninteresting. And so that's why I put this talk together. Let me move my laptop here. I'm going to tell you what that attack chain was, and it's going to be direct. We're going to come out of here with an absolute ability to definitely own a significant number of large enterprises that are out there with an internet presence. So take notes, take photographs, take video, whatever you want to do. It's totally fine. If I do something wacky, tag me on Twitter. It's cool. I'm fine with photography during this talk, obviously. Don't do this at home because it'll put you in jail. This is everything that I'm going to talk about here. Well, for the most part, is like CFAA violations. But I'm doing this because, like, you remember that show on Fox a long time ago where they had the magician with the mask on and he would tell you how all the magician's tricks worked? And they're like, well, why are you wearing this mask? And he was like, oh, because the other magicians will kill me if they find out I broke the magician's code. We have a guild and we meet once a month and we have to kill anyone who exposed our secrets. And whether or not that's true, I don't know. But there's a lot of penetration testers who got upset that I was doing this. And I was like, fuck you, you're lazy. Maybe like develop a new attack chain. So like what I'm doing here is like the low hanging fruit, most common stuff that I found in a ton of my clients. Who here is a defensive engineer of some sort? Who works in a defensive security position? That's a huge portion of the internet, of the audience. I'm used to the internet. I don't know what real life is. Is this it? This rainbow of ocean of people? That's awesome. So this talk is for you guys. This talk is developed for defensive engineers to be able to go to work on Monday and address each one of these problems that I present so that, A, the attackers that are out there, the skids, the bots, the whatever, that are doing these attacks are going to be thwarted right out of the gate. And B, well, I mean, some of these are going to take more than like a Monday afternoon to implement, but you know what I'm saying. B, if you call in a penetration tester, once you're at the maturity level that necessitates that, you're actually going to get your money's worth. They're not going to come in and do my cheater bullshit, half-assed lazy pen tester job, and then charge you $125K, and then peace out, and then come back a year later and do it again because you didn't fix anything, because that's what you do. Yeah, keep laughing. the steps I list here are not effective against all environments. Unfortunately, they were effective against a majority of the environments we came across, including Fortune 500s, Fortune 100s. Basically, the larger the enterprise, the more effective this attack chain is going to be, just because your attack surface increases. It's just a statistics thing. We're not going to have time today to discuss every possible attack scenario, or even all the common ones. This is just a low-hanging fruit one I put together that I used the hell of when I was feeling lazy. By the way, like I said, nutrient-rich talk. This is a two-hour presentation. I'm condensing into like 45 minutes, so fucking strap in. It's going to be a wild ride. I'll run you through this real quick because who cares? Who's aware of the Penetration Testing Execution Standard, the PTES? Yeah, I think that's more people than work in a defensive role. Who works in an offensive security role here? Okay, that's less. So there's this number, there's this weird overlap where there's a bunch of you who know what this is but don't work in security at all. You guys, that's passion. That's amazing. Or you just like reading. Who here has beaten the internet? I remember you. I'm the boss of level 3, you may recall. That's a tangent. So this is a standard developed by penetration testers like Dave Kennedy, Nick Prococo, Chris Nickerson, who said, look, we need a framework that everyone follows, so we make sure that everyone is doing the same job and a thorough job. We need to make sure that if you call one penetration testing firm to do something and they give you a report and you fix the things, then you call another firm in, like you should, to have a second set of eyes, you know, a year later, what have you, that they're still going to follow like the same kind of framework and do the same job to make sure that like everything is being done that can possibly be done. And it basically goes like this, and I'm eliminating a lot of steps so we can get through this. But first, you start with your intelligence gathering. That's on your couch. That's where you start with like, well, what can I figure out based on what I have available to me from where I'm sitting currently? And that's going to include Aaron records. That's going to include, you know, what's your general IP space? What are you hosting that IP space? What services are listening? Maybe host names, maybe there's some email addresses, things like that I can gather. And eventually I'm going to take all that information, I'm going to be able to piece together a bunch of possible attack scenarios, and I'm going to use that during the exploitation phase, and that's when I'm saying, like, all right, now that I figured out a bunch of possible ways in, let's start trying things. Let's start exploiting situations and see where that gets me. And then eventually, for the convenience of this talk, one of those is going to work. Spoiler alert. And then eventually what that means is you get in and you land on a box, you land on some kind of system, and you start this post-exploitation process, which is like, okay, what is this system? What can I gather of this system? Is the gold here? Is the treasure I'm looking for like right here? And you have to start digging through this and seeing what's going on there. And then eventually that kind of like melds back into like the information gathering phase. I moved that too soon. Anyway, and it goes in this circle like you saw on the screen. And eventually, hopefully, you get to whatever the treasure is, whatever the gold is that you're looking for. For the sake of this discussion, we're going to say the gold is just domain admin, because generally, in nearly all cases, once you gain control of a domain administrator account within an organization's enterprise, you're good, and you can usually quickly get to wherever the gold is. And the gold in this case might be credit card numbers, PII. Who the fuck knows? Usually your client's going to define that. But it's whatever you're looking for. And so generally, if you just get DA, it's easier than hacking your way using bizarre exploits and hoping for the best and password guessing into the actual system that has the gold. Because also, that's usually pretty noisy. And the more noisy crap you're doing for the longer amount of time, the better the chances of you getting caught by something. Excuse me. So, first and foremost, as the sign says, intelligent hackers live off the land. We rarely exploit known vulnerabilities. We almost never burn O-days on like a penetration test. What am I doing then? If I'm not like doing a vuln scan, finding vulnerabilities, and then like running an exploit from Metasploit to exploit that and get on the box, like what am I doing? I'm exploiting bad security scenarios. I'm exploiting a bad security posture. I'm exploiting generally lazy slash overworked sysadmins. I'm exploiting the fact that you don't have the headcount to really do the job that needs to be done. And the larger the organization, the more that ends up being true. And I used to just say lazy sysadmins, and some people got really offended by that. And they're right, because more often than not, they are just overworked. They don't have the headcount. The more I talk to people, they're like, yeah. Like, who's a sysadmin here? Who's a general sysadmin, manages Windows servers? A lot of this room. Yeah, like you guys, who here is not overworked as a sysadmin? That's zero hands. That's amazing. That's great. And that's true. And everyone has done the thing where you're like, I got to get this server stood up. I have to make this work today. I will worry about securing it tomorrow. I will worry about pushing the proper GPO configs to it tomorrow, whatever. And then you don't. And then that's just, now you've got this island server floating out there with a crap config on it or something. And this happens all the time. And like I said, the bigger the company, the more often you find these things. That's what I'm exploiting out there. Using exploits for vulnerabilities, it has a high chance in a lot of cases of blue screening a system, crashing services, like that's really noisy. Like even if they're not just doing like active monitoring for odd behavioral statistics, crashing a server sets off a lot of alarms. Like, cause you're not even setting up security alarms at that point, you're setting off just the sysop alarms. You know, your network techs get woken up and paged out when like a router reboots. So you don't wanna do that stuff. You just wanna take advantage of what's out there. We don't import hacker tools into networks for the most part. We're not downloading, you know, all the latest and greatest stuff onto a system once we've owned it in your network. That, again, it's noisy. It's real easy to blacklist the sites where these things come from. It's real easy to write rules to detect these things. And we don't need them when, like, the operating systems, for the most part, often provide all of the tools that we need already. We probably don't use Kali, in all honesty. I don't. I use just a Debian build with like the six tools I need on it. Kali's cool, like if you just need to get up and running and just have a bunch of tools available and you're playing around, if you're doing OSCP or something. But like, once you start pen testing for a really long time, you find like, wow, I only use like these six, eight tools all the time. And if you need another one, you just download it and run it. And that works way better, especially if you're using your pen testing OS as like your daily driver. Like Kali sucks as a daily driver, because it's not its purpose. But if you're like, I just want my OS that I can just use for whatever, and also it's got the six tools on it that I use, that's a really common scenario. So like if you're, I'm going to skip that. Malware is really only used as a last resort, because there's two scenarios. You're using known malware, and that's probably going to get caught, or B, you're using malware you made, and do you really want to blow that on like this engagement? Sometimes you do, depending on what the payoff is. So that's kind of a last resort scenario. And the bottom line here is that, like, your blinky boxes, your, like, automatic detection crap, it doesn't work against legitimate activities, like successful logins. Like, who here alerts on successful logins? What successful logins do you alert on?
Logins that we don't expect.
There you go. Like what? Name one. After hours logins, sure, you can set login times for accounts. Domain admin, you should almost never see a domain admin login, right?
SOS?
Sure, SOS, absolutely. So like you can alert on successful logins. Most people don't, especially if I'm just logging in as average users. They don't alert on null session access because that's odd. Like that's a normal scenario. Like there's supposed to be null access because that's how you set it up, because either you didn't know to lock it down, or you said you'd lock it down tomorrow and you didn't. Access that doesn't require any elevated privileges, like general activities, generally there's no alerting going on. And like, yeah, there are some environments where you find that's happening, and that's cool and that's awesome. Again, that is not my experience while working in the field, unfortunately. So, garbage aside, let's get to work. This is when you get your phones out. So recon, this is the recon phase. Like I said, this is when we're like kind of passively seeing what's out there using publicly accessible resources. This is us on our couch trying to like fingerprint this company. So there's a few tools I use in this scenario that have paid off really well. First one is Aaron. Who doesn't know what Aaron is? I think everyone's familiar with Aaron. Aaron is the internet registry. This is the company that keeps track of who owns what IPs, how to contact them, what their, you know, how much of that IP range they own, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So like I said, it gives you two really good pieces of information. It tells you, well, and in fact, we can even talk about, like, it can tell you, like, a target, like a organization that owns maybe the company you're looking at, and that might be another path that you can go down. You can back it up one and find a larger range. By the way, how cool is this tool? Check this out. It does this too. Yeah. Every time I use this thing, I just have to screw with it for a while because it's amazing. And I got it for this talk because there's, like I said, lots of text on the screen. It tells you what their full, you know, CIDR and, well, non-CIDR, like every IP that the company owns. It tells you a few other things that I'm going to discuss in a little bit later. So that's cool. So it's like, all right, cool. Just from having, like, say, a company name or a company's domain name, I've now been able to figure out every IP address they own. And then I can, like, what am I going to do with that? I'm going to throw Nmap at it. You know, Nmap is still what we use. Like, everyone uses Nmap. Nmap's one of the first security tools you ever learn how to use. And honestly, it's just a great troubleshooting tool. That's what we still use. Nmap can be slow. If you're dealing with a global, like a multinational Fortune 100 that has presences in 12 countries and like 2/8s that it owns, Nmap's going to take you a long fucking time. I wrote this tool called Scan Cannon here. And is it going to come up here? Yeah, there it is. So write that down. This is the code, and you could just copy it. Just take a picture and type it at home. Who remembers that from the 90s when you get the computer magazines and they have a code in them? And I'm that old. So this is up on my GitHub, or you just Google Scan Cannon. Greets to Kate for helping me write a lot of the awk code. Throw up a hand, Kate. Hi, that's Kate. Hi, Kate. What this does is it leverages both Nmap I'm drawing a blank on the other tool. What's the really fast internet enumerating tool? Mass scan. I'm sorry. Thank you, guys. It's right there somewhere. I'm like trying to parse. Like, that's what I called it, something. It leverages Mass Scan for the speed of identifying what hosts are up. But Mass Scan has a problem where like telling you what services are running and doing its fingerprinting is really inaccurate just because of the speed at which it runs and the way that it waits for packets to come back and things like that. So what I do is I find which hosts are up using Mass Scan, and then I use Nmap to actually do all the dirty work. And by doing that, you cut your time down by like 38% in like my best scenario. Your mileage may vary. But what it also does is it takes like all these results and it dumps them into a ton of flat text files, which you can then use to push into whatever other tools you want to run. Like it'll give you a text file that's like, here's all the hosts that are just running RDP. And that's just a bunch of IPs, and here's all the hosts that are running Outlook Web Access. And it's just all these flat text files full of things that are easily pushed to other tools because that's the way I did things. So what am I looking for anyway? Like, what am I hoping to find out of scanning this entire thing? Like, what is going to be the most effective thing that I can leverage the fastest to gain a foothold within this organization? Start shouting things. This is going to get boring. What's that? A sandbox? Oh, yeah, Samba. Yeah, SMB, sure. What else? Why SMB? Like, what's so interesting about that?
File sharing.
Sure, file sharing. What is SMB authenticated against, usually?
Domain.
Yeah, Active Directory. Why is that interesting? There it is. But also, several of those things were correct, and I'll touch on those in a bit. So I'm looking for Active Directory logins here, because if I can get a good set of credentials that authenticate against Active Directory, that means now I have something that I can use to log into the domain legitimately and as quietly as possible. Because like I said, generally successful logins aren't something that are getting flagged. And so I just did some... These are some old Shodan. Everyone knows Shodan, right? Shodan's a site that you can use to see what's out there listening on the internet without having to bother with scanning the entire internet yourself. And so I think here, like, what do we got going on here? We've got, this is like 46,000 Outlook web apps, and I love OWA. That's 46,000 just in the United States there. 2.7 million remote desktop. And these are just, this is like listening, like these will accept connections. This is RDP servers, that's globally. Cool, so like we can log into this shit. But like, I love web-based, this is a VPN, this is a VPN login. That's really cool because a lot of times you can get a drop down for the VPN group name, so you don't even have to bother guessing that. But cool, like, we can log, like we found places we can log in, that's cool shit, but like what are we missing? Like what do we need to log into this shit? No, we need creds, right. So how do we get creds? Let's find out. We're gonna find out together. Yeah, I already know the answer. So one of my favorite places, like creds generally, the first place you wanna look for creds is like just trying to gather usernames, email addresses, things like that, and suss out what usernames would look like based on what you've been able to gather. One of my favorites is hunter.io because it's really easy to scrape without paying for the service. And what did I get here? I got 14,000 valid email addresses for Google's corporate domain just from hunter.io. And it gives you dates and things, and you can sort it by whatever. But anyway, like that's a great place to look for email addresses if you just need that for phishing or what have you. Foca is a really cool tool. I used Foca in this demo because it at least gives me like a nice GUI of things that I can point out. But I think what I did here, I scraped Home Depot's website. Foca is a tool that looks for documents on a company's website. And like, why do I give a shit about documents hosted on their website?
Metadata.
Metadata. You guys are great. Like no other, like, yeah. All right. So metadata, like these documents are often going to contain a username, a PC name, like IP addresses, things like that for the creator of that document. And yeah, that's what I got here. This is from Home Depot. You see right there, like here's username. What does that say? A O'Brien. So what can I learn from that? Well, I can learn what their username nomenclature looks like. So we know it's probably first initial last name just because O'Brien's a pretty common last name, right? So like given that, and then going back to like all these email addresses I had, I can probably take these two things and create a whole ton of like legitimate Active Directory usernames, right? Yes. You're following along. All right. So like that's cool. Moving on. Back at Aaron again, like you can use Aaron to find email addresses. And these are really cool because often these aren't just like good examples of like, here's what the current email address format probably looks like. It's usually the person whose email address is in Aaron is at least some kind of IT admin. So solid phishing target. Like usually you're not getting like an enterprise, like an EA, like someone's assistant is going to be registering domains. It's usually a security person. It's usually an IT admin. It's often someone higher up. It's usually like the VP of security or something like that. Like they have a policy that requires that his information be placed on all of these registrations. So make a note of that. So how do we defend against this? Port service scans, like that's simple shit. Your Blinky boxes defend against like anything where you're just blasting crazy crap all over the place. Like any IDS, IPS, web access firewall, or web application firewall is going to catch that real fast. You should be scanning it yourself. Absolutely, that's something that you should be doing. That's just part of basic inventory management. You should know what you have on the internet. You should know what services you have listening. You should know why they're listening. You should be doing reviews of your firewall logs and see like where your holes are in your firewalls and find out why. Every firewall rule should have a note on it as to why it exists. And if it doesn't, you should start hunting that down. That is an awesome project that's going to take you 3 years. Have fun. Go for it. The larger your organization is and the longer it's been between the times they've done that, the more horrifying those lists are. Anything that you can't clean up and shut down, write alerts for any kind of activity you think might be weird for that, like 1,000 connection attempts in a second, kind of odd. For your private data, like getting you can kind of send like takedown requests to like recon and or hunter.io and stuff and tell them, but like it's just going to turn up there again. I mean, honestly, like there's nothing really you can do. I'm a big fan still of like pastebin alerts. Whose company here alerts on pastebin posts containing information about their company? There's always a tiny amount, but it's really cool that I still see that happening. That's absolutely something you should do, and it's super easy. You just search pastebin every day for new posts, and you see what has like company IP, and I mean intellectual property there, even just your company name, company email addresses. That's absolutely stuff you should know. You should be looking for new registrations of domains that look very close to your company's domain. And those are going to turn up every day. And then that should be real easy for legal to take down. Because if you're working for a huge corporation, you probably got legal. And you better put them to work because they're probably on retainer, sucking up money. There's one thing lawyers hate. It's work. So stick it to them. All right, cool. So we found AD logins. We found some usernames. We've definitely figured out, like, these are going to be AD usernames. We know the format. We know where to punch them in to start trying to log in. Notice how we never ran a vulnerability scan. I never fired up Nessus or Qualys or any of that shit. Attackers don't use that. We might as a last resort. Like if we can't find anything else, we might try that super slow. But it's noisy. And like I said, we don't exploit a lot of vulns because it's dangerous. So that's last resort stuff. You should be running vuln scans, absolutely. You should be running them monthly, if not weekly, and addressing those. Because as a last resort, we will exploit things. But for the sake of speed, we didn't run one because we don't have to. I'm already looking good here. We have our target AD logins. We have our usernames. What are we missing? What do we need to log in? Passwords. Did I skip a slide? No, I didn't. We don't have any passwords, and I don't know what to do about that, or I didn't. And then what I did is I came up with this really cool method of psychically deducing common passwords in an organization from a large group of people, and I'm going to do that for you now. The shiny suit helps with that. That's what this is about. So what I need you all to do right now is just in your head, and don't shout it out. Think of the default password your help desk assigns to you when you call in for a password reset. Don't shout it out. You're going to ruin the trick. Spent a lot of time on this. All right. And I'm going to take all these from your brains, and I'm going to psychically transfer them onto the screen. I need you to count down from three. Ready? 3, 2, 1... Oh, it feels so good. It's better than sex, I'm telling you. So, why are we laughing? Let's talk about why we're laughing. Because, yeah, it's funny. We're laughing because it's true. So, like, what are we looking at over here besides my awesome presentation tool? We got Spring and Year. And I should update these to say 18 or whatever, you know. Wow. Who cares? Or 19, yeah. It's July already. Why seasons?
Interns. 90-day password policies.
What happens every 90 days? Here, at least, not in Iceland, we get a different season. And so your password expires, and you're like, I'm not going to think of a new password. It's summer now, so summer. And then fall rolls, well, fall 17, and like, well, now it's 2018, well, spring 18. And it's not the same password as you used before, because that's what your password policy said you can't do. So you're just going to follow this, and you're going to think you're cute. And they're like, oh, you need a special character. So it's, oh, we'll throw an exclamation point at the end. Yeah. That's the first thing I check for. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, oh, this is, so, like, if you're not cute. Password one, exclamation point, shut up. This is a personal favorite. Chris Nickerson turned me onto this one. Fuck company name? I get huge hits with that. So many of you think you're cute with this. Like, stick it to my company. Because they can't see my password. Fuck this place. Fuck everybody. That's... I'm sitting here guessing it. So if you just rely on humans to come up with their own passwords and don't force them to do something wacky about it, I'm going to guess your password. So, if you're not, if this isn't happening in your environment, I have word lists. Like, people are going to use one word and a number and a symbol. They're gonna change the vowels to numbers, like my Twitter handle. I'm a nerd. Sorry. who knows what Cewl is? C-E-W-L, really cool tool that I use to scrape words off of a company website that often describe what it does, and I'll throw those into a real quick word list. Because, like, what am I doing here? I'm brute forcing, right? I'm taking all these possible passwords, all these possible AD logins, and I'm trying them all. So because of that, like, we want to keep the word list as short as possible because, A, you're going to be dealing with account lockouts sometimes. I can't say it without laughing. You're going to be making a lot of noise. Or it's just going to take a long fucking time and you're lazy. So you want to, like, do something like, I'll try through all these and I'll run Cewl and I grab all those and I'll, like, just add 18, 19 to the end, add an exclamation point, whatever, and then... go from there. Also, there's the Have I Been Pwned databases and databases like that where you can just like look, just search for a company email address and look for a password next to it. They're probably still using that. So now you can suss out account lockout policies even while you're brute forcing. So you can figure out like exactly when an account locks out sometimes depending on the responses that you're getting. And then you can just make your brute forcing take longer than that lockout policy takes and avoid that altogether sometimes. And that's fine because really you're just using automated tools and you're just going to go get a sandwich or come back tomorrow anyway. I like to use a tool called Burp Suite to do my brute forcing. And that's really good for if you're dealing with brute forcing of web forms, or you can just write something in Python. Like, that's one of the most basic things you can do, like submitting authentication via a web form. So, like, use whatever tool you want, really. All you're doing is supplying a username and password and then checking what the response is. Burp's really cool for web forms. Like, we're talking about VPN logins. We're talking about Outlook Web. Who's still using OWA at their office? Outlook Web Access? No, not that many. That's cool. Anyway. Glad to see it. RDP, like anything with a web-based login, like you can throw this at it. Hydra is really good for RDP. IkeForce is really good for VPN because it figures out a lot of the other things that the VPN needs to log in as well. Metasploit has brute forcers for fucking everything. It tends to be slow, but it's in there. And if you don't like to operate outside of Metasploit for some reason, go ahead, it works. Mail Sniper. Mail Sniper is a really cool one to point at email servers specifically, anything running Exchange Web Services, EWS, and EWS is something that a lot of people don't know that their company is running. It's not absolutely necessary, but there's a lot of weird stuff that relies on it so that if you disable it, you're going to kill a lot of your clients. Like the macOS Outlook client requires EWS. Like it doesn't communicate directly with the Exchange servers for some reason. It needs like this weird background system running. Somebody developed, what was his name? Anyway, check out Mail Sniper. I can't remember his name right now because I'm trying to scream through this. This tool called Mail Sniper that... it's a PowerShell script, and it talks to Exchange Web Services, and it allows you to brute force logins. What's really cool about Mail Sniper is you don't even need AD usernames. You can throw email addresses at it because Exchange Web Services will accept a user's email address as a valid username. So you don't even have to worry about figuring out what the usernames are. If you can scrape a whole ton of email addresses like we did before, bam, throw it at Mail Sniper, pending that they're also running Exchange in their environment, which a ton of people are. Also, what it can do is once you've got access to a single user account, you can tell it to start scraping certain terms out of the inbox. You can search emails. You can go nuts. You can look for shared mailboxes that the user has access to. You can do a lot of cool stuff. My absolute favorite thing about Mail Sniper and EWS is that Microsoft has never developed a way of integrating two-factor and multi-factor authentication into the back end. So if you're communicating and trying to log in and brute force directly against EWS, there's no MFA. So even if you're protecting OWA on the front end with an RSA token or some shit, if you have to run EWS in the back end, you're out of luck. And then I've totally bypassed your two-factor. It just doesn't ask for it. And Microsoft's like, no, it doesn't support two-factor. You should use Office 365 or something or go to Google. Who doesn't do anything with your data? Don't worry about it. That's an awesome tool. Moving on. Phishing is another, like, I don't even know if it's a last resort. It can be like a first resort. Phishing's fucking cheating. it's insane. Because it just works. Like, as a penetration tester, I had so many clients that would not allow phishing as part of the engagement. Because they knew it would succeed, and they knew we would get in so fast that they were like, it's not worth our money. We're not getting anything out of this. You're telling us something we already know. Don't do that. Go do something else. All right, I guess. But I mean, why don't you fix this fucking problem first? So let's talk about defenses. Like everyone does security awareness training, right? It's the most boring shit you've ever seen in your life. You let it play in another window and turn the sound off and keep just clicking next until the videos are done, right? Because it's awful. And why do we do that? Like, why do we ignore the security awareness training? Because we don't give a shit, right? It's not our stuff. It's my CEO's stuff, and fuck him. Right? Yeah, I got the woos for that. Like, that's... that. And it, in my personal... research that I've done, reading white papers, or you know, both psychological and technical studies of like phishing and what phishing worked, and theories on why it works. It seems to be that like phishing works because users aren't vigilant at their work computers, because they're not vigilant at their home computers. They don't have a natural vigilance about them. If they're using Gmail, Gmail's phishing and spam filters have gotten so good that like you rarely actually get a phishing email come through anymore. Like Gmail is training users to not be vigilant. It's training them to be like, everything's safe, everything's fine, just fucking click whatever. It's all good, man. Google. It's all good, man. Yeah, so like the best security awareness training that's out there is the kind that not only trains your users to be vigilant with their work computer, it trains them to be vigilant and with their own email, with their own data. It trains them on how to set up multi-factor authentication in their Gmail account and their bank accounts. You know, it's the kind that makes them vigilant people, not vigilant employees. Because then if they're just naturally vigilant people, they're going to come to work vigilant. It's just going to be a natural part of what they do. They're going to accidentally protect your company. And like... we've gone from like users are fucking idiots to users accidentally protect us. That's a huge gap we've closed there. But it's really hard to find training like that, and often you're going to have to create it yourself. But I found that works the best. Had a really cool story. No time for that. Moving on. Hopefully, the tech got us started a little late, so maybe hope will be nice and let me go another 10 minutes. We'll see. So MFA to lock down your email and your AD logins that are facing the internet. We know that, but I also told you how to get around that. So moving on. Like I said, take some pictures. You can shoot me questions later. Here's some good stuff on password bias. Oh man, one of my favorite things that I caught users doing was they'll, as a special character, when you tell them, hey, don't put an exclamation point or a one at the end of your passwords, you know what they do? They do word space number or word space number exclamation point. And they always put a space after the word. And so then I just write a brute forcing rule for that. Like, this is the hardest thing to do is like telling your users how to like write a good password, because they're just so insistent on writing the tiniest possible password and but still being within your weird policy you've set. So like I tell them to use sentences. Anyway, take a picture of that. We gotta move. That's the wrong slide, sorry. That's the correct response. I did that somewhere else and like nobody knew if it was a joke or not, and they just... And thank you for the big clap. I know who you are. I saw you on Twitter. I put that in there for you. All right, cool. So like we've got good credentials. We've logged in. This is our post-exploitation. What do we do from here? I can't believe I typed that there. All right. So what we do is we fire up this tool called Responder. Who knows Responder? Hoot if you know Responder. Oop, I'm going to go back to Responder for a second. Hoop. Yeah, so Responder, what that does is it listens for a whole bunch of broadcast requests on the network. It responds to them and says, hey, that's me, but I don't know who you are. Send me credentials so I know you're legit. And the other computer goes, yeah, cool, no problem. Then I go, thanks, you're cool. And you can get a whole bunch of credentials that way. And like I said, I'm screaming through this. Looks like we got about 10 minutes in the hour. So like now I've got a bunch of credentials, got it that way. It's going to give you credential hashes and you can't pass those, but you can crack them and you throw them in your cracking rig. Or honestly, like I cracked so much shit on my MacBook laptop because your passwords are bad. You just throw a really good word list at them, crack these hashes like we did for the brute force and the email addresses. And now you've got like valid plain text. And so you take those and you throw them into this really cool tool, called CrackMapExec. Who knows this one? Crack CME, CrackMapExec. Say it three times fast. This is awesome because you can just give it either valid credentials or NCLM hashes, and you can set it to just spray that across the network and see what there is to log into. And not only does it like just log into stuff and tell you what it logged into, you can have it enumerate users and it file shares and things like that. You can have it do all sorts of cool stuff. And it can pull hashes out of memory from the systems it can log in for other users. And often those hashes are the ones you can pass back into this to keep looking at new systems. And you kind of like spider your way through this network until you've gathered like just a massive amount of credentials. Moving on. And there's a tool that it now runs called Mimikatz. Who knows Mimikatz? Yeah, everyone knows Mimikatz. Mimikatz is the tool we run to just pull plain text creds or sometimes hashes to crack out of memory on various systems. You could run it in PowerShell. You could run it via WMI. There's a whole bunch of ways that it has from bypassing endpoint protection from detecting what it is. And that's really cool because that's going to get you creds. And so what we're looking for here, what are we looking for? What's our goal here? DA. We're looking for DA creds, right? So we're spidering like a madman through this entire network. And it's huge because it's a Fortune 500. It's probably got 30,000 endpoints. So that's great. That's a massive attack surface. Statistically, you're going to find something. Problem is, it's going to take you a long ass time. Because you don't know where these DAs are logged in. You're hoping. You're brute forcing your way through a network, just guessing and hoping and praying that you're eventually going to find a DA account before you get caught. That sucks. You don't want to do that. So there's this total cheater bullshit tool out there called Bloodhound. Who knows Bloodhound? This is a weird one. Yeah, awesome. That's great that this is getting so much attention. What Bloodhound does is it uses, it doesn't require any kind of creds whatsoever. It just requires you to be in a machine that's connected to the domain, and it uses things like null sessions and general communications that don't require you to authenticate against anything to just communicate with computers across the network to figure out who's logged into a system, which systems have admins connected, what group those people who are logged in are members of, and create you this kind of like little chart that you can use to figure out exactly what systems you need to log into to steal creds, to log into something else to steal creds, to log into something else to steal a DA's creds. it saves you an immense amount of time. This one down here, this is a full network view of something. This is very average. All the red things, I don't know if you could see that. That is, this is computers with an administrator account logged in. This is super common. An administrator account means you're going to have a much better chance of like stealing credentials and crap out of memory. And so basically what you're doing is you're hopping around, following this little flowchart, eventually getting to the computer that has a domain admin's credentials. You steal those out of memory, you log into domain controller, you make yourself a DA account. So like even if they change that domain account's creds, you still have one that you own, you're all set, now you're DA. If all of that I explained was like too cheatery, too long for you, there's a really awesome cheatery bullshit tool now called Death Star that uses PowerShell Empire. Who knows PowerShell Empire? That's a huge one. Yeah, PowerShell Empire has become like the new Metasploit interpreter. It's C-based as well now as PowerShell. But it's really cool. As soon as you get an Empire shell on anything in the network, you fire up Death Star and you leave. you hit go and you go into another room and you just stick your head in once in a while to see if it's done. You just don't touch anything. And it tries this insane amount of known attack vectors to try and steal creds and find where those creds work and eventually get you a domain admin account. Using the attack chain I just described amongst many others, it's hard to see here, but anyway, like it does all this and you come back later and it's like, oh, cool, found domain admin. Oh, here you go. There's the password. Oh, what a great password, guys. And so then, like, that's how that works. So then, like, hooray, you're DA! And that's it. So I hope that was useful there. Post-exploit defense, take a picture of this. We don't have time to go through all this, but disable all your stuff that's broadcasting on there. Stop using null sessions. Holy crap, do you guys love null sessions on everything? Bloodhound. Bloodhound's really hard to defend against. Like, you could check for, like, anomalous traffic volume to your DCs. Like, that gets pretty technical. That's more tricky rules to write, but like that's pretty much one of the only things you can do. I didn't get all that, so I'm just putting these up so you could take pictures because I'm getting the signal that I got to get off the stage here. Oh man, stop giving everyone local admin! Fucking stop it! Stop it! Stop! Oh my god, why? Nobody needs this. Like, and even if they need like to execute several things as admin, like, restrict it to just those like two tasks they have or something. Like, you don't need to give everyone blanket local admin in every fucking machine that they're on. Grow a spine. Fuck. Like that, I'd say, like, that's besides multi-factor on the edge, disabling local admin on endpoints is like the second most irritating thing for me as an attacker. Like, if that's disabled, I'm like, oh, this is gonna suck. But I never find that, so good luck, idiots. Yeah. You should alert every time a domain admin logs in, because your domain admins shouldn't be using their DA account as a daily driver. Why are they... Why? Stop. All of this. Just take pictures of this. Do this. This is stuff you could do on Monday. Oh, man. Yeah, okay. So here is the list of tools that I have. In this presentation, you can get a shot of this. Like I said, these slides are up in some form on my GitHub, too. It's github.com/JohnnyXmas. That'll be on the final slide. I'll give you like 5 seconds on this. All right, moving on. There's only one more slide of this, and I swear I'm getting off this stage. Thank you guys for being patient with me and giving me this little extra time, given the technical difficulties. I'm sorry. Like I said, this is a 2-hour talk I had to scream through. I hope this is really cool and useful. This is literally a thing. This is an attack chain that I use constantly. I have gone from couch to DA many, many, many times using exactly what I showed you here. And so that's it. I'm Johnny Christmas. Thank you guys. Go fuck some shit up.